We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM, and welcome to the 8 o'clock hour on this Thursday night. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Greg Likens with you. Matt the Biff Wilson on the other side of the glass. We're taking you up until 10 o'clock. Playing some Creed there, Matt, as I think a lot of people, they snicker when they hear Creed, but who didn't like Creed back in the day when they first came out, right?
I think everybody has that one band, you know, that they just don't admit to liking. Most people, that's Nickelback.
I love Nickelback. I love Nickelback. Judge me all you want. Creed is only okay. I mean, they had some songs that everybody knows. But Nickelback, to me, you can make fun of me all you want. You can text me. You can rip me if you want. But I've seen Nickelback in concert a number of times. I enjoy their music.
What's your favorite song?
Ooh. I probably have to go back to one of their first albums, The State, and probably pick one off of that, which is like, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the names may escape me. Certainly people know, you know, How You Remind Me and Photograph and some of the ones that turn into massive hits. But yeah, I'd probably, a lot of my favorite songs of theirs come off like their first album. So I've been a Nickelback fan since a long time. And then they got huge, and then people made fun of them, and they turned into, like, the next version of Creed, right? They're always those bands, that, like, as the different eras and time passes, that are actually very successful in terms of record sales and selling out arenas and all that, but then people just love to bash and to criticize for whatever reason. Maybe that's just part of our society, right? We don't like some of these groups or artists that have success. I don't know if it's just jealousy. People criticize Creed, criticize Nickelback because they say a lot of their songs sound too similar. You have an issue, Biff? The Biff? Tell me how you really feel. Come on, give it to me.
I mean, I would be lying if I said at one point I didn't like Nickelback, but I don't know. It faded pretty quick. It faded within about a year of like listening to them and be like, okay, I'm over it.
Okay. Do you ever actually listen to any of their albums or just hear the songs on the radio?
Mostly just hear the songs on the radio, you know. I mean, you had to pay for the albums back then, you know. I just wasn't doing it. Okay. And plus, if I had LimeWire on my computer trying to download that, my mom would have killed me.
Mm. LimeWire. There were a bunch of those music downloading programs that reminds me of early days in college. That's where you used to get all your music. I'd still buy some CDs at that time, but, right? I mean, a lot of college. I mean, that was... I never had Napster because Napster was the first one that really brought that to national, international prominence when you had the file sharing programs and then they had all those different offsets, including LimeWire.
What a throwback, the name Napster. The last time I even heard that was watching The Social Network, the movie. Besides that, I don't even think, you know, there's probably kids who are like about to be in high school who are younger than Napster. You want to know that? That's like a scary thing to me.
That is scary. A lot of kids that, you know, have never heard of MySpace, Napster, right? I'm trying to think of, like, things that
they don't know Tom.
That were popular.
Your best friend always, Tom, always would be your first friend on MySpace no matter what.
Yeah. Those, I don't know if those are the good old days or those are just days of old, but either way, yeah, brings back some memories there. Hey, we're getting a bunch of text messages in the Kendall Toyota West, Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22, mainly about the Miami Dolphins. We're going to talk more Dolphins and get the expertise of Adam Beasley from the Miami Herald coming up at around 8:20 or so, so next segment. So we will get to him in a moment. But in the meantime, I want to open this up to your thoughts. So in case you missed what I said at the beginning of this 7 o'clock hour, I just don't like how the Dolphins seem to be openly telling everybody they're going to tank and plan for 2020 because while I don't think that's necessarily a bad strategy to do something different, considering over the last 10 years they've been between 6-10 and 10-6 every single season, and only one of those years was a 10-win season. There were no 9-win seasons, so there's been a lot of 8-8, 7-9, 6-10s. They're the definition of mediocre, or most times below average, to the point where they're not getting the high draft picks and all that other stuff. Like, that's what I went through. And so I don't mind if they're going to do something different. I just think it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to promote it through an Adam Schefter leaked report through his sources, which, you know, he doesn't just go willy-nilly and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to put a report out there without backing it up with multiple sources and it being on good authority. So that's my problem right now, is the Dolphins, maybe they already have been, but they continue and increasingly become a laughingstock, because the teams that tank, typically they will tank and they know how to tank and they go through with the process. They just don't announce it the way the Dolphins are announcing it. And I think that's where I have an issue. 560-22 is how you text the show. One of our texters says, it's possible that all that Ross meant was that they would cut a lot of dead weight, not bring in big free agents, play rookies, and go 3-13. He may not have been referring to tanking at all. Well, that's essentially what tanking is, but I understand your point. Another texter says, to say that drafting defensive players does nothing for you is a load of bunk. Look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. They loaded up on defense and became a fantastic defensive team, and they were able to get to the AFC Championship with a below-average quarterback. They need to keep rebuilding the linebacking core and the defensive line. They can go for the quarterback and use their picks to trade. Well, I don't know if anybody said that it doesn't make sense to draft defensive players and it does nothing for you. I mean, you need to have a well-rounded team. But my point was that if you are asking me, I was bringing up the comparison and really the contrast between the NBA and the NFL. In the NBA, if you decide to tank and quote-unquote trust the process like the Philadelphia 76ers did, there's a lot of teams right now in the NBA that are playing for Zion Williamson or R.J. Barrett or any number of the talented players that are expected to be in the NBA draft. You can make a huge difference, one of five players on the court at any time. So if you get a transcendent star in the NBA, then suddenly it changes the trajectory of your franchise. You get a transcendent defensive player in the NFL, well, you need more good defensive players around him. Otherwise, it's just one really good player, but one of 11 and one of 22 in your starting lineup if you're talking offense and defense. That's my point, was that the only comparison to, say, an NBA star that you're able to add to the equation would be a quarterback, because that's where you can really be a huge difference maker. But nothing against the defense. It's just you need multiple very good defensive players. Another texter says, Kyler Murray I like but do not love. If the Dolphins can land Tua, that kid is a franchise quarterback. So I think these people think I'm Kevin Rogers, which is flattering. So that's great, because I love K-Raj. Known him for a long time. But yeah, this is Greg Likens. So some people are texting in, hey, K-Raj, which is cool. But maybe I should just say a bunch of crazy stuff, and then you'll think it's Kevin Rogers who said it, right?
Wait, you're not Kevin Rogers?
I've tricked you the last 2+ hours. We've been working together, Biff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I have a lot of explaining to do.
Another texter says, tank for Trevor Lawrence. Well, the problem with Trevor Lawrence, you're going to have to wait till 2021 to get him. Another texter says, when they lie in tank, it's a problem. When they're upfront about it, it's a problem. Y'all don't know what you want. I just told you that if they lie and they tank, that's the way to go about it. So I know what I want. I know what I want. That's the way they should do it. Tank, but don't tell anybody you're tanking. Right? Because this is the precedent you're setting. You're telling everybody in January of 2019 that we're not going to try to win in the upcoming season. And 15 months from now is when we're going to hit the jackpot. All is going to go according to plan, and we're going to get our franchise quarterback in 2020. So many variables. And there's nothing that you can do that will ensure that the plan will be foolproof and will come to fruition exactly the way you want it. Another texter says, I understand that the Patriots have Tom Brady, but how much tanking have they had to do to maintain greatness? Right, they haven't done any tanking whatsoever. That's why Brian Flores, when they hire him, he's coming from a culture and environment, which is the only NFL culture and environment that he has been exposed to, in which tanking is not an option and has never even been a glimmer of a thought about it. And yes, they have their franchise quarterback. I think your point is, of course, you have to start there, and certainly they've got a great coach, but they have not had to do any of that to maintain greatness. And in fact, they have been the team that, if you want to say, that has provided the groundwork and really the blueprint for how to maintain your greatness. The way they've shuffled through that roster, the way they've made their moves, and oftentimes they are getting rid of players a year sooner rather than later, and it's worked out for them. They're in another conference championship game. It's absolutely amazing. Another texter says, what about Will Greer? Eh, that's a possibility. I think he'd be more of a second or third round option for the Dolphins this year. And I would be all for it if they drafted a quarterback this year in the middle round, second, third, fourth, fifth round, and a guy that has some upside, and get a quarterback the next year too, and have some competition, something that Ryan Tannehill never had. Another texter says, imagine if Tua has an injury like what happened to Mackenzie Milton at UCF, then what do you do? Well, that's another part of this, right? You're just going to tank, and then you're gonna hold out hope that something like that doesn't occur? I'm with you. There's a lot of gray area there that you have to consider. Another texter says, I think fans do not understand tanking. Coaches will always coach to win. Players always play to win, but it depends on the roster that the management puts on the team. I think you think players are going to be losing on purpose out there. That does not happen. No, I don't think that. Maybe some fans and some members of the audience do, but players are always going to play hard because they're looking for the next contract. They're looking to stay employed because it's such a cutthroat business. It's all about, you know, anytime a team or an organization tanks, it's the front office that's tanking. It's ownership that's tanking. And it's how they devise a plan to construct a roster that it makes it difficult for them to win games. So you play a bunch of rookies. You play a lot of young, underpaid guys. You don't go out in free agency and spend big. You create cap space for yourself, and you especially play a quarterback that you know is not going to win you many football games. That's how you do it. The players that are actually out on the field, the coaches, they're still going to try hard. There's no doubt about it. They're going to still go out and do their jobs. One of our texters says, I'm so sorry, Greg, for addressing you as the that K guy. By the way, you and Biff make a great team. Love the show. Thank you. No problem. Hey, listen. K-Raj is a great dude and a really good broadcaster. So I take that as a compliment. Another texter here says, for the Dolphins, maybe it's a smokescreen so they could go up and grab the quarterback this year. Maybe it is. For some reason, I doubt it. For some reason, I don't think the Dolphins are that clever, though. I will say this, though. It does not prevent them from going up and taking a quarterback this year. And I'm all for it. Like, if this year they find a guy, like if Dwayne Haskins is their guy, they go through the workouts and Dwayne Haskins just blows them away, then move up and get Dwayne Haskins and let him be your quarterback of the future. If it is Kyler Murray, have conviction and do it. If it's this year or next year, they've got to draft a quarterback. And I think, you know, we'll be able to figure it out as we go along, ultimately what they decide. And then we'll know if it was a smokescreen or whether they just continue to go through with the plan in 2020 it is to get their quarterback. A guy who has probably more answers than most of us because he's around the team all the time and he's really, really tuned in to what's going on is Adam Beasley from the Miami Herald. Does a terrific job covering the Miami Dolphins. He's going to join the show next here on QAM.
Radio.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens here with you on this Thursday night. Hope everybody is doing well. Matt the Biff Wilson on the other side of the glass. We're taking you up until 10 o'clock this evening as we've got a lot going on in the world of sports, especially in the South Florida sports scene. A little bit later on, we will touch on the Miami Hurricanes, what they have going on as they've completed their coaching staff, and the latest on Tate Martell, new quarterback with the Canes, who is apparently here in South Florida and is, I think, loving life right now as he's looking ahead to his future. Also, we've been talking a lot about the Miami Dolphins and read a lot of your text messages in the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22. We're going to hear from Adam Beasley from the Miami Herald here in just a moment. But there's been, you know, a lot going on in terms of what the Miami Dolphins are going to do and their strategy and philosophy for the upcoming season and really the offseason and planning ahead to the 2020 NFL draft. And again, my whole take on this isn't that they have a problem where they should not build towards the future. I think they clearly need to rebuild. I think they need to do something different. I just don't like the fact that they broadcasted and it seemingly announced to the world that they're planning to tank for the 2020 draft. That's just not the way to do it. You can do it, but do it quietly and just do it behind the scenes and make it happen and make it seem organic, even though you're going to do it purposely. So I think that's the way they should do it. But then at the same time, when you take a look at everything that's been going on with this team, I just don't understand why that has occurred. Biff, just tell me in my ear if you don't mind, because I don't have my phone in front of me. Yes, let me. I got to get you Adam Beasley's contact. Give me 1 second here. Biff, say something on the air or play some music or something, because I got to grab my phone. I got it charging in a second. What do you think? Do you like the idea of the Dolphins tanking?
You know, I do, but I don't. I don't know. I think they could tank all they want, but in the end, you just have to have good coaching. If you don't have good coaching, there's just not much you could really do there. I mean, Brian Flores could be a really good coach for all we know, and assuming he doesn't make any sort of last-second decision of not coming to Miami because he hasn't signed anything, so he doesn't have to guaranteely stay, as we've seen with Cliff Kingsbury and all these kind of people doing all that kind of stuff. I don't know. It just depends on the Dolphins.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know if it's about coaching as much as about the front office and whether they can make the right decisions, because to me, you look back at things, not saying that Adam Gase was perfect, but I certainly think that if they had better draft picks, better personnel decisions, then suddenly you're talking about a better team, and you're putting a coach, whether it's him or other coaches they've had in the past, in a more advantageous position to try to win football games. That's the way I look at it. Because if you hit on the quarterback spot and you're not dealing with Ryan Tannehill for 7 seasons, then I think you have a much better chance at winning if you're the Dolphins. So I don't know. Something needs to change. There's no doubt about that. The question is whether they make it happen in this offseason and make a big splash in terms of being able to really bring a dynamic threat at the quarterback position this year, or whether it happens next year. But I think if they're going to go through with this quote-unquote tanking as part of the rebuilding, then we are likely to see that occur in 2020 as far as building up to that draft. And if not, then, you know, hopefully it's not just the same process over and over again for this Dolphins team, where we see another 6-10 to 10-6 somewhere in the middle there, because it's been way, way too much of that going on for this Dolphins organization. By the way, we do have some basketball games going on tonight. I see the TNT games. We've got the 76ers currently leading the Indiana Pacers 58-51 early in the third quarter, about the 10-minute mark there, as you've got a team that tanked purposely for a number of years in the NBA and now have stockpiled a ton of talent. We've got their own form of the Big Three with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler. And it's been a bit rocky so far with Jimmy Butler there in Philadelphia. But so far, they're making it work. And I'll be interested to see between them and the Celtics, two of the more talented teams, arguably the most talented teams in the Eastern Conference, if they can kind of get things together come playoff time. Because right now, certainly have the Milwaukee Bucks, who the Heat saw firsthand on Tuesday night. And then you've got the folks there in Toronto who've got a terrific team, but not sure about the future with Kawhi Leonard. So we'll get back to that in a little bit. But right now, time to go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline and welcome in Adam Beasley. He covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam H. Beasley. Bees, appreciate your time as always. How's your Thursday night going so far?
It's great. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well. Are you like me? Are you still celebrating and reveling in the fact that Syracuse basketball team beat Duke on Monday night?
Well, the transitive property tells me that they're the number one team in the country right now, right?
Right.
That's what I'm picking up.
With 5 losses, right?
D- the question is, do they get in the AP top 25 votes after that win?
I think they may get some votes. It may be premature. I mean, they got to beat Pitt on Saturday. So knowing them, they may lose that game to Pittsburgh. And then, you know, it's like, oh, we got a draw for the week. But I'm hoping that gets them on the right track, is kind of the signature moment of the season that suddenly puts it all together for them.
The question is, like, this new system, Q1 wins what it's all about, right? So if they get like four or five of those, it doesn't matter who they lose to, they go to the tournament.
I agree. Yeah, I think that seems to be the new equation if you're trying to figure out what the selection committee is looking for. So, yeah, you beat Duke. If you can beat Virginia, right, some of these really good ACC teams.
They're not beating Virginia, man. Let's be serious.
Well, I didn't think they were going to win in Cameron Indoor Stadium. So,
the thing about Duke is, like, yeah, they're a flashy team. They're up and down. They're a lot of fun to watch. But Virginia just grinds the soul out of you. I mean, if you make a mistake against Duke, it's fine because you're going to get the ball back in 10 seconds anyway. But if you make a mistake against Virginia, you're down 10-0. It feels like 100-0.
That's true. Although, you know, UMBC somehow figured that out. So, you know, Syracuse has the talent. It's just a matter of whether they can put it all together. So we'll see. And heck, now we know they're scheduled for the football season coming up too. So you got a lot of exciting things going on.
What do you think South Florida sports fans think about Syracuse having a better athletic department than Miami right now?
I wasn't going to bring that up, but we can let that marinate for a second.
Well, it's the truth. I mean, it hurts sometimes, but it's the truth.
Certainly with the major sports right now, things are better up in upstate New York. That's for sure.
How's Miami's lacrosse team? I haven't checked in on them.
Yeah, right. I think Miami probably has a better, what do they have, like a crew team? They probably have a better.
Oh, I'm sure they dominate us in that. Like swimming, they must crush us in that.
Any of the aquatic sports, I think they're doing much better. But yeah, lacrosse, I think Syracuse is sticks ahead, if we're going to use
that term. Likens, it's early in the segment to break up that kind of pun.
Yeah, well, hopefully we don't have any more of those. Hey, Beast, let's get down to business with the Miami Dolphins. I know Dolphins fans are likely doing this already. It's natural, right? They've been born with it. But how hard should they be rooting against the Patriots on Sunday so that Brian Flores can finally be hired?
well, does it really matter? I mean, here's the thing is that he's going to have, by and large, the staff he wants, unless he pulls, you know, Josh McDaniels and backs out. People know he's going to be the coach of the Miami Dolphins. It might be in a week. It might be in 3 weeks. And guys he wants knows he's going to be the head coach. They're going to make a decision, I guess, on trust, on faith, that he's going to take the job. So, you know, it'd be nice to have a head coach in here because it's crazy. Think about this, Greg. I'm going out to Mobile on Sunday for the Senior Bowl. Monday through Wednesday, I'll be out there in Mobile. And the Dolphins' contingency might be Chris Greer, his new assistant GM, and that's it, because nobody else is on staff. I mean, the coaches they have under contract, they're essentially letting them go take other jobs. And the Dolphins have no one formally on their team right now. It's a very, very strange time.
It is weird. So if that does take place, I mean, how crazy will things be if the Patriots do lose, the Dolphins hire Flores? We don't know exactly the timing on that, but a lot of the media, like yourself, as you mentioned, are going to be in Mobile, Alabama. Are they going to have an introductory press conference when Greer's up in Mobile? How's that going
to
work?
We're going to sit down to some fried oysters at Wenzel's and get to know the new head coach. Look, I assume, I haven't discussed this with the Dolphins, I just assume they're going to want that formal sit-down announcement with Steve Ross and Chris Greer. So all the TVs, because there's no TV station is going to go out to Mobile for that. So all the TVs can get the visuals that they need. So it's entirely possible that that they announce it, say, 4:00 on Monday, and then immediately after, Greer jumps on a plane and flies out here. He'll probably have some surrogates at the Mobile for the entire week. The question is, then, would Brian Flores come? Because I wrote about this today. They got to find a quarterback, and there are going to be some pretty good draft eligible quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl this year. Do they take a look at them? Do they think about Kyler Murray at 13? The crazy thing is, they don't have a direction right now because they don't have a coach. And how do you evaluate players that you don't know 100% what the system's going to be, because you don't know 100% who your coach is? Now, it would be stunning for a Patriots assistant for the second time in as many years to back out, you know, from position that he's in. But there has to be at least a shred of doubt in their mind that they don't know who their next coach is.
It is such a weird situation. Adam Beasley covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Join me here on 560 WQAM. And I think that's probably why, you know, if they have to wait until after the Super Bowl, if the Patriots win on Sunday and then this is prolonged another couple of weeks, I do think they're almost at a disadvantage because of everything you just described. Plus, I don't know how many of these assistant coaches that they've probably secured kind of behind the scenes, you know, if other opportunities will pop up between now and then as well.
Yeah, if someone comes in and says, hey, look, you know, is a bird in hands better than one in a bush? I don't know two in the bush. I don't know what the saying is, but we can guarantee a job right now, and it's doing X, Y, and Z, and you'll have definition, come do it. I'm sure that is a factor. It's probably not a big factor, but I'm sure it is a factor with all that's going on behind the scenes. But here's something even crazier, Greg. What is the Super Bowl? February 2nd, February 3rd, something like that. I don't know what the exact date is. First Sunday in February. 3 weeks after that, they're in Indianapolis for the combine. I mean, that's how quick of a turnaround it is. So, let's just go crazy. Let's say Brian Flores and the Patriots win the Super Bowl. It would pain me so much for that to happen because I'm ready for a fresh storyline. But let's just say that happens. He's not going to come Monday morning and show up at Dolphins camp. They're going to be celebrating because they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's got a parade to attend.
Exactly. So it might be a minute or two before he actually gets in here and gets established. It's really weird. I think a good story, and I should probably look into this, would be how do coaches who make a deep run to the playoffs and then take a job as a head coach elsewhere, how do they fare in that first year? How important is that first month? It's really fascinating to me.
I agree with you. And, you know, we'll have to find out on Sunday whether any of these scenarios that we're discussing actually come to fruition. All right, this is something I've been talking about a lot tonight. I want to get your take on it because I don't disagree entirely with the notion of taking a different approach if you're the Miami Dolphins as an organization. It hasn't worked. So if you can do something different, I'm fine with that. I just don't like the fact that the Dolphins, via Stephen Ross in his press conference in so many words, and also the Adam Schefter report, they seemingly, however that was leaked out to him, they've announced to the world that they're tanking. And you can rebuild and be okay with losing short-term to benefit yourself long-term. I don't like the idea, though, of essentially broadcasting that to everyone. What do you think of that?
You know who cringed when he heard that?
Who's that?
Tom Garfinkel and Jeremy Wells.
My goodness.
Jeremy Walls, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. The people responsible for selling tickets. Because, whoo, they I'm not saying that they had issues selling tickets last year, but it was a challenge coming off a 6-10 season. And that was with Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill coming back. And the idea is this team might make a run. You bring in Robert Quinn. You bring in Danny Amendola. Frank Gore's in the house. Maybe they'll be pretty good. How do you sell this? And, yeah, I mean, there's a whole different conversation. How do you keep your players physically, emotionally, and spiritually invested into a project they know is doomed to fail? It's designed to fail, not just doomed to fail, designed to fail. But how do they make the books work? And no one's going to, you know, cry the blues for Steve Ross if he has a tough year at the box office. But it can't be easy. So, yeah, I can guarantee you, whenever it is Brian Flores takes over, if it's Monday, if it's 2 weeks from Monday, whenever he takes over in that introductory press conference, he's going to say, I don't believe in tanking. We're trying to win. We're going to build this the right way, but I'm never okay with losing. And we're going to do whatever we can this year to be competitive. Way inside he knows, man, we're going to stink this year.
Right, but that's the way you do it. I think, like, smart organizations, and that's how you frame it. Even if you're lying through your teeth, you tell the fans that you're going to try and that you're doing everything you can to win football games and make this team as great as it can be currently and for the future. You do lie, even if we all know about it, because most teams, at least the ones that are smart about it, Bees, from a business perspective and also just from a PR standpoint to make sure fans remain interested, you may be tanking and you may be rebuilding, but you do so quietly, at least as far as the public's concerned, right?
Let me ask you this. Do you think that this franchise has enough credibility to be upfront with what it's doing, but saying, trust us, in 2-3 years, we're going to be so bleeping good? Do you think this franchise can pull that off?
I don't think they can. Because then I think most of the fans who are pretty intelligent will go and look at their draft history, right? It doesn't matter. I mean, it's not all on Chris Greer, obviously. He's now entering a phase in which he is finally the man with the final say, right? So I think we can all be fair about that. At the same time, everybody won't give him the benefit of the doubt because they've just looked at the history. So the history says they're not going to make the right decision, so why would we trust them moving forward?
Yeah, I wonder, and I put this up on Twitter, and it was pretty. I think it was 2-1. Would you be okay with 2-14 if it meant Tua? And the vast majority of Twitter responders said yes. Here's the problem, though: the people who are following me on Twitter who are engaged aren't the typical sports fan in South Florida. They aren't. The typical sports fan of South Florida doesn't have that level of engagement. Doesn't have that level of savvy. And they're just going to be like, this team's stinking. They've got no clue. I don't know what they're doing. This is terrible. And they're going to tune out. And already, South Florida's got pretty bad TV ratings when it comes to football. I mean, they're one of the worst in the National Football League. And I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But again, if it means that they get their franchise quarterback finally and they're competitive for a decade, I think that's a sacrifice worth making.
I agree with you. And Adam Beasley joining me here on QAM covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam H. Beasley. I agree. If ultimately you get the guy, if it's Tua, if it's Justin Herbert, whoever it might be, it'll be worth it. I just, you know, I think they can all along the way, Bees, whether it be this offseason or past off seasons, there are so many preventable, like PR type things that the Dolphins could do better at and could improve on. And I don't think this is really on a lot of people in the organization, even the media relations department, because I think they do a really good job. But I think a lot of times Stephen Ross steps to the podium, and even if they coach him well, he kind of just says whatever he's going to say, and oftentimes is a little clumsy, and there's nothing they can do about it, right?
That's a very polite way of putting it, clumsy. I'm clumsy. I stumble over my words at times. I have trouble articulating myself. I'm Winston Churchill compared to that guy, all right? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He is not built for that forum, okay? And he does so many things right in the world of business, but it's a completely different skill set. And so, yeah, if he's your salesman when it comes to the Dolphins rebuild, it's going to be a bleak year at the box office. There's no question about that. But you got to do what you got to do. Here's my real concern. Not that if fans are going to tune out this year, because a lot of them will, and they have been increasingly for the last 5-6 years. My question is, does Steve Ross have a stomach for it? Guy's going to be 79 years old in May, or whatever his birthday is. He's never won a playoff game. This is his 10th season, Greg, and he's had one winning season, and I think 7 losing seasons. He had 8-8 twice, I believe. And so he has been ground down to a nub by the reality of the National Football League in general, and the New England Patriots in particular. Is he going to be okay with 2-14? People say, yeah, he knows what he's doing. Other people say, give him 3 games, and he's going to be sick and tired of it.
Yeah, it's a really good point because, you know, he has already part of his ownership, I think part of the signature is that he wants that instant gratification, right? He's like anybody. I mean, I think we all want to win now. I mean,
well, okay, here's the thing. I mean, perfect example. Perfect example. We have this plan we think is in place. Build the trenches this year. Got to rebuild the offensive and defensive line because they've been woefully underachieving the last couple of years, and they haven't worked. Rebuild there, and then 2020, get the quarterback, skill position players, and you're ready to roll. Well, if they're sitting there at 13, and the best interior guard's on the board, or Kyler Murray's on the board, who do you think Steve Ross is going to pound on the table to take?
I think we know the answer to that, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, his history says he's going to want the guy. He's going to want the flash, the guy that can make a difference. And, look, we can have a conversation about Kyler Murray because I think he would be a great pick for the Dolphins. It just would kind of run counter to what we think they're going to do. And, again, you smart franchises make a plan, and if a better plan manifests itself, they audible. That's wise business. But I feel like there might be a little bit of knee-jerk reaction sometimes that I think the perfect example is Ndamukong Suh. The season before the offseason of Ndamukong Suh, their run defense was really bad, and they needed a bunch of help up the middle. And Steve Ross fell in love with Suh, fell in love with him. And let's be honest, Mike Tannenbaum fell on the sword for that one. It was Steve Ross who was driving that train, okay? Steve Ross is the reason Dominican Sue was a Miami Dolphin. And Steve Ross was the reason that they still have, what, $13 million of dead money in 2018?
Right.
For Dominican Sue, 2 years after he was on the team. So I'm not saying that he doesn't have patience. I'm just saying that we haven't seen a whole lot of it.
That's true. So this could test that patience. By the way, would you envision Kyler Murray being a guy that they may scrap that plan for? Do you think that that's a realistic possibility at 13?
I'll tell you what. I talked to somebody in that building during the fall about Kyler Murray and if they thought he was an NFL quarterback. And the response I got was, it really depends on the system and the coach. And we don't know at all what Brian Flores is thinking. Because you saw him. I mean, you saw him in the CFP, and you saw him in the big games he played. The guy wasn't just small compared to his offensive lineman. He was small compared to his running back, okay? I mean, you look at him, when he was in a shotgun standing next to his running back, he was by far the smaller of the two. How does that hold up physically over the course of 16 games when 275-pound defensive lineman who can run a 4.3, 4.4 are crushing you? I don't know if it can hold up just physiologically. I don't know if the science is there. But I tell you what, man, you watch him play, and he's a baller. And he's really fast, and he throws really well, and the offense at Oklahoma was really good when he was the quarterback. Is it worth a shot at the number one pick in the draft? No. Is it worth a shot at the number 13 pick in the draft? Now you're talking.
Yeah, it's intriguing, and I'm with you. I have my doubts about his size as well, but certainly the people get paid a lot of money to determine these things when he goes through the workouts. We'll figure that out on their own. Bees, really appreciate the time as always. Safe travels to Mobile next week. It should be very interesting, depending on what happens between the Patriots and Chiefs, to see if we've got this confluence of news coming for the Dolphins up in Mobile.
I feel like you should have me on next week.
Well, guess what? We'll make it happen.
Okay. All right. I'll give you a live update from beautiful Mobile.
That sounds like a great plan.
Let's do it.
Have a good night, Bees. Thank you.
All right. Later, bud.
All right. There he is. Adam Beasley does a terrific job covering the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam H. Beasley. We're getting some text messages reacting to that. We're going to come back, wrap up this 8 o'clock hour next here on QAM. Radio.com. Oh man, he had to play this Nickelback song of all the Nickelback songs. Biff, we don't have any other ones?
I mean, we have others, but this is the most Nickelback and Nickelback song.
Oh man, yeah, come on, you're just feeding into
I told him, I gave him a year and that was it. That's all I gave, that's all I could give him.
Not that it's a bad song, but I mean, this is the kind of song that people would make even more fun of. You love it secretly. You love this. Is like,
I mean, this is a song during that year that I heard, and I liked it at that year. After that, you know, it's like one of those songs that gets in your head.
I would say though, this is probably not for if you are trying to convince a non-Nickelback fan that you know they're a better band than maybe their reputation indicates. This is probably not the first song that you would go to if you're going to play something for them, but.
You're far from it, right?
Yeah, far away. Exactly. You got it. Is this your favorite Nickelback song?
Of all time.
No. You're making that up.
Maybe later we'll go to the one that I really liked.
You're going to play another one later?
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hold you to it. Make sure. By the way, I looked it up in the commercial break. I think my favorite Nickelback song is Leader of Men. Do you know that song? Do we have that song?
We do not have that song.
Okay.
I know that part.
Do yourself a favor. Look it up. You're looking for a good song. That's a great one right there. Free unsolicited advice all night long from me here. Greg Likens here with you. Matt the Biff Wilson playing the hits on the other side of the glass. Big thanks to Adam Beasley for joining us last segment. We'll take you up until 10 o'clock. We've got a quick segment here, so I will read a couple of the text messages that we have coming in on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22. 560-22. Somebody says, Miami, bad team, bad organization. Okay. Another texter says, not a Dolphins fan, but tanking may deplete the fan base and lead to an empty stadium. Yeah, that's the point that Bizu is making. Like, how do you allow this report to leak, and how do you have your owner so clumsily say that in the press conference, knowing how it's going to affect ticket sales and really the morale around the team within the fan base? It's just very easily avoidable. Another texter says, why can't we draft a quarterback this year and next year? There's no rule against that. I'm with you. The more the merrier in my book, because you figure that out, a lot of the other situations and positions on the team are easy to take care of, relatively speaking. Another texter says, get O linemen and linebackers, otherwise it doesn't matter. Another texter says, you can still get a great quarterback between 11 and 17. They just need great scouting and drafting. Also, what are they doing with Luke Falk? He is really good. He might be our franchise quarterback. The Finns never used him. Awesome show, K-Raj, LOL. I mean, Greg Likens. Okay. Appreciate the humor there. Luke Falk, you know, I actually kind of like the upside, the possibility of Luke Falk. He is under contract for next year, from what I understand. He was put on IR after inexplicably Adam Gase had four quarterbacks on the active roster for the beginning of the season. Like, there's not many teams that have three quarterbacks on the active roster, but he had four for much too long of a period of time. But I do think Luke Falk is a guy that is somebody that probably fits the mold of a quarterback that you could thrust into a starting position, say you're trying to develop him, and then lose a lot of games in the process. Another texter says, what exactly did Ross say? I believe it's the media that is blowing this out of proportion and made this interpretation. Yeah, Stephen Ross. Well, one thing he said flat out when asked why Adam Gase didn't work out there is because Adam Gase wanted to win and win now. That's what he said about his coach. Are you kidding? Like, what's the purpose? Like, let's all channel our inner Herm Edwards, and you play to win the game, right? I mean, that's the point. You got 16 opportunities every season. You try to win as many of those as you possibly can. Adam Gase didn't work in Miami because he wanted to win and wanted to win now. That's exactly what Ross said. And then later on made mention of the idea that he was okay with losing for a couple of years, or at least this is more of a paraphrase on my part, and that if it meant bettering the team for the future. So I don't think the media is blowing this out of proportion. Like, when an owner says his coach didn't work out because he wanted to win, I don't know how you can blow that out of proportion. That's one of the most absurd things I've ever heard any owner of any team ever say. Seriously. It's just crazy. Another texter says, tank with Tannehill. Bring him back. If he's as bad as everyone thinks, he'll still get a decent draft pick. Okay. That's one way to do it. All right, we'll get to more of your texts. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line 560-22 coming up. Let's take a quick timeout. When we come back, let's pay tribute to the greatest Miami Heat player of all time on his 37th birthday, plus talk a little bit about a historic night last night in the NBA. That's next here on 560 WQAM.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.